It's the Johnny and Barry Show.
Play the intro.
Oh, yeah.
You know what that means?
It means it's time for the Johnny and Barry Show. How you doing, Barry?
I am great. This week is amazing. We're getting close to July 4th, so I'm feeling great about that.
What are you doing for July 4th?
I think I'm probably just going to hit up a barbecue of sorts, man, or like take it easy, probably hit up the beach or something.
Nice. Sounds good.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I am going to buy a shit ton of fireworks.
Are you now?
Yeah. I am cautiously paranoid, or not paranoid, cautiously, I don't know, they say cautiously paranoid? Someone who's afraid of danger.
Right, right.
You know that about
me. Yeah.
I'm uncomfortable when I'm in a car with somebody else driving.
Okay.
I don't like walking under scaffolding.
I don't like that either.
Last year, I realized I like setting off fireworks, though.
Mm.
And I got hurt last year setting off fireworks.
Wow, what a, like, you know, kind of coming of age.
No, it's true. Yeah, I'm a real man now. All of a sudden, I am a man. I'm no longer living in fear of one particular thing,
right?
Which is setting off fireworks.
Kind of the most dangerous thing.
In a way, yeah. The statistics are insane for how many people go to the hospital each year. And right. I had to get an x-ray a year ago.
Ooh.
So let me tell you what happened. I didn't blow off any arms or legs or fingers or toes, thankfully.
Okay. Right.
But I set one and then I ran. Because that's, you know, common practice. You set off fireworks, you run away from it.
Right, right.
If you don't, that's how you end up, you know.
Right.
So I'm running away and I run and I jump and I hit the bottom of my foot on like a jagged rock.
Jagged rock is the jagged edge cover
that's
band.
Right. Yeah. And listeners, if you don't know Jagged Edge, you should. It's an R&B group from...
Wasn't that Let's Get Married?
Let's Get Married.
The baggy suits in the video.
Where to Party At.
Where to Party At.
Great song. Shout I'm going to listen to that
Jagged
when we
Edge.
Yeah, we're done here.
So Jagged Rock.
So Jagged Rock lands on my foot, vice versa. Really hurt. And I knew right away, I was like, wow, like that actually, I hurt myself.
Yeah,
you know, like, it's not like the kind of thing where it's like, oh, I'll just shake it off. Like my foot was black and blue.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I really am an idiot because here I am getting hurt running away from a firework.
Yeah. Like, but at least you didn't get hurt by the actual firework, which is good.
That's right. That's right. And so happy 4th of July, everybody.
Exactly.
Happy 4th of July.
Be safe.
Don't hurt your foot. Don't hurt your hand.
Yeah.
Just be safe and have fun.
Yeah.
It's the 4th of July.
Right. It's a celebration. Let's remember, we've got a lot to be thankful for over the year. We always do as Americans.
That's right.
And it's one of those moments where everybody comes together, almost like Thanksgiving, you know, like homeless people can eat for free and eat good. So we're big on that kind of stuff here, as much as it may be purported otherwise.
That's right. That's right. So happy birthday, America. Okay. 4th of July. It's going to be awesome. Hope everybody has a safe and fun time, of course.
Yeah,
shout
indeed.
Out to our listeners and to our sponsors. So who are our sponsors, Barry?
Well, we'd like to start off with Village CareMax.
Right.
Who provide a service for people who need to live the life they want to live by taking care of your elders and aging population in their own homes.
That's right. You don't need to send grandpa to a nursing home. Keep him at home where he's happy. He's got his television in his chair.
That's all he needs.
Village CareMax. Of course, attorney at law, Benjamin Hayes. Strong handshake and an even stronger sense of the law. And lastly?
We've got Aviator Sports. Don't forget about that pool party that me and Johnny might throw to kick off the actual show. It's going to be great. You can throw your own pool party before us if you want to be, I don't know, a dick about it. But
at least maybe invite us,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that would be nice.
But that's right. So Aviator Sports, they got the camps. They got the pool parties. It's a whole lot of fun. Get
awesome.
At them. Okay. I also want to say, before we bring on our ghost hunter,
right.
And we are bringing on a ghost hunter today, which is
ghost
pretty freaking sweet.
Hunter.
Last week, Barry, we did our first show. And first shows are hard.
They are.
And we weren't perfect.
It's true.
I actually got an email from the editor-in-chief of the Brooklyn Paper Radio, Vince DiMaselli, host of the Brooklyn Paper Radio show, and all-around stand-up guy.
Right.
He goes, good show. Nice job for a first episode. You weren't clear enough about where the kids went to school.
Okay.
And he's right.
It's true. They went to Murray Bertram, by the way. Or it's in the Bertram building, but it's UA Maker.
UA
is the name
Maker,
of this,
right.
Is the name of the school.
And Bertram, it makes me think of Crank Anchors.
I know.
I've been, been bothering you about that. I didn't pull that last week, by
no,
the way.
No, you didn't, thank God.
But yeah, Bertram.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's watched Crank Anchors know what I'm talking about, you know? Did you ever watch Crank Anchors?
Not so much. I mean, I've seen episodes, you know, like the famous for like couple of phone calls or stuff.
Sure.
And I know they're really funny. And there's like one of those Muppets like that kind of has like a parted mustache and is brown.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they have some great Muppets. Yeah. We got to get some Muppets for us, actually.
I think we'd be so easily Muppetable.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And by the way, I love our logo.
Yeah. I'm pretty like, shout out to
Sylvan over here who hooked up the logo. I was just talking
really
to him.
Dope. I was like saying, it too.
Don't trademark that thing because I want to get paid on that too. But okay. So anyway, here's the other thing, Barry, is that, you know, journalistically, I feel like a rookie a little bit.
Okay.
So when I listen to the show, I'm like, man, you know, I really would have liked to ask one more question. I would have liked to know, you know, what would these kids say? Are they kids?
They're young adults.
What would these young adults say to another person out there who may be struggling with their own gender identity? Maybe they don't have the support system that these guys had. Mm-hmm. So what would they say? And you know what?
What?
I got Sky on the phone to answer that very question.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's difficult. It's really hard when you are kind of discovering yourself and you start to gain confidence in yourself and realize that maybe the people around you don't share that same, you know, level of acceptance. But I mean, it's hard and I don't want to undermine that, but it's also when you start to become more confident in yourself and realize who you are, I think that really reflects in other people's reactions. Because if you don't really know how to feel about yourself, it's going to be harder for other people to know, you know, how should I respond to this and how should I, you know, let this person be themselves. But the more confident you become, I think it helps other people realize that that's not the thing that defines you and you're so much more either as a friend or a child to someone than your gender or your sexuality. So I think it's just realizing that it's going to be a much better life if you can be the first person who really accepts yourself. There's such a strong community out there who wants to help you out and who's going to be there and who's going to love you while you're giving the other people around you time to adjust.
Sky, thank you for the time. You're the best.
Yeah, no problem.
Did you listen to the show yet?
I did.
What'd you think? Is it all right?
I thought it was, yeah, it was great.
Nice. All right. Thank you. I'm glad you liked it. All right, Sky. Thank you. Take it easy.
All right. You heard it from Sky. Great, but not perfect. Let's see how we do on episode 2.
And without further ado, dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. We are bringing on Nick Smith Koblitz of Crypto Paranormal. Sorry, I'm cautiously paranoid. Crypto Paranormal. Is that even right?
Yeah. That's correct.
All right. Nick, let's just...
Sounding good over there.
Yeah, he's got the great voice. We should just let him host the show. Nick, I'm trying to give you a round of applause. I got to do three things at once. There it is.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I don't even know where to begin with this interview, Barry.
I might lob one in there.
Let's go. Give him a nice softball here.
I was... Before we hit record, listeners, I was talking about how, you know, if someone's just coming home late for a party, whether they be your significant other or, like a good friend, and you know they're in like a rough part of town, or you don't necessarily go to Dykeman Heights all the time, and they don't either, and you're like, why are you in Dykeman Heights at 2 a.m.? I can't imagine what it's like when you send a text back to people who care about you, and they're like, Nick, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, I'm just like kind of in this basement, like talking to this British ghost right now. Just like, give me a second. I'll be there for dinner in a minute.
Honestly, after 10 years, I think most of them are pretty much over it by now. Wow. But
how did you get into this?
Well, I started CPI in 2004, in July or August of that year. And essentially, the group formed out of my pre-existing love and admiration for all things scientific.
Let me stop you right there. 2004, at the tender age of 14?
That's correct.
That's so you started a business?
I did. At that point, I don't think you could call it a business. I think it was more of a new way to piss off my parents.
Got it.
But
okay. Incorporated way. A limited liability
how
corporation.
How did they feel about that whole thing? They're like, you really... This is what you want to do.
Honestly, they were skeptical at first.
That's what parents are for.
It absolutely. And it isn't every child that says, hey, mom, dad, can I borrow the family video camera so I can spend the night in the local cemetery? That doesn't usually go down well with parents,
for
especially
sure.
When it's a school night and you got to be up early. And
so you went to the cemetery Well, as a 14-year-old with a video camera,
it's a little handy cam.
Cemeteries, abandoned buildings. I started reading and exploring allegedly haunted locations within the five boroughs, private residences, cemeteries, and other locations that had been written about by other paranormal investigators in the field.
Can we ask where you're from?
I'm from Queens, New York.
Nice.
Dope. That you got a good starting cemetery out there.
I actually drove past it today on my way here.
I might get a ride home with you today.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good.
Okay.
Sweet.
But that's
Johnny's got a ride home.
But that's really not why we brought you here. So okay, you're at 14 years old. You're starting to hunt ghosts. When's the first time you really found one?
I would say the first case that really piqued my interest was a private residence in Sherman, Connecticut in 2005. And this had been the former home of the surrealist painter Arshil Gorky. Whoa. Arshil Gorky was an Armenian artist and lived here in the States with his wife Agnes Magruder. Now, the home in question had a long-standing history of paranormal activity, belonged to a family friend, and I was able to convince them to let me come in there and spend the night with some of my equipment. Reports of activity included lights flashing by themselves, the sound of furniture dragging across the floor while the homeowner would be laying in bed at night, doors and cupboards in the kitchen opening by themselves.
This is what the homeowner told you.
Yes, that's correct.
You were 15.
At this point, yeah, I would have been 15.
But you were like a young adult at 15. You weren't like me at 15, like looking for Pokemon cards and wrestling. And like, you're like, hey,
I had lots of Pokemon cards. Hey, now.
Did you watch wrestling?
I can't say wrestling, but.
Me either, bro. I didn't have like pay-per-view. I'd watch it at my friend's house.
But The Rock, though. The Rock. You like The Rock.
Okay? I hated the fact that The Rock. Hey, I love The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, right now.
The actor.
Dude, like. The Rock 2020. But
and that might actually happen.
I just hated the way that it punctuated my life, where like I'd ask someone something and they'd be like, it doesn't matter. And I'd be like, oh my God, are you serious again with this? And then, you know, outside That's of great. That, it was like pause and all this other stuff.
Right. Episode one, we talked about that. She just could
never finish a sentence, but go on. So
anyway, we're in the home of, former home, I should say, of Arshil Gorky. And incidentally, I should mention that he actually passed away on the property. He hung himself in what's now the neighbor's barn. The property has since been divided up. Mm. While in the basement of the location of the residence, I was able to record several anomalous temperature fluctuations. Now, keep in mind, we are in a basement. They're moist. They're drafty. Yeah. Probably there is a natural explanation for this. Natural draft, something from the heating system kicking on. I don't think the experience in this case was anything supernatural.
Okay.
But it was enough to...
Are you calling Mr. McGruger a liar? McGrudger?
I think he needs to check his facts a little
Whoa.
Bit.
Whoa. And his thermostat. Maybe plug those holes.
Yeah, yeah. So it was enough to sort of galvanize the rest of my career into the field. And after that, we were able to secure some donations and start securing access to more renowned, allegedly haunted locations. Private residences, inns, historical societies, things of that nature.
All right. Let's say Barry and I decide after this episode, or one of our listeners says, you know what? I actually have been inspired today. I would like to hunt ghosts myself.
Right.
Nick, give me a startup kit. What do I need? Is there a belt? Is there a backpack? Like, what's the ghost hunting equipment?
The gear
that you recommend?
They'd call that a starter pack. If anyone out there wants to make a ghost hunter starter pack meme for us and send that over,
JohnnyandBarry@cngradio.com is our Gmail account.
Awesome,
I like it.
That would be fresh.
I think the notion that equipment, night vision cameras, electromagnetic field detectors, things of that nature are required for paranormal investigation, this is nonsense, and it's something that has been fueled by reality television shows and
Those
Hollywood movies.
Bastards.
The shows have done a lot to the field. They have made it more of an acceptable topic to discuss over dinner and with your friends, but the methods employed by many of these groups are pseudoscientific at best, and I think really represent give a false impression of what real paranormal investigation is like.
Mm. We're going to get more into this too, because I saw you posted this thing and I read it as you have beef with another ghost hunter or group of ghost hunters, and I really do want to get into that.
Sure.
First, starter pack. I'm not off that yet. How much is the one that the industry wants to sell me? How much is that going to cost? How much is the one that you, an honest ghost hunter, you know, what do you recommend? How much money do I have to spend here?
As I said, the necessity of equipment, I think, is a falsehood. You really don't need it. What you need to be level-headed, and you need to understand science and history. Because right. The more science you understand, the more you're able to understand that most reports of paranormal activity can be explained through scientific means, whether it's weather conditions that are creating cold spots or cold sensations, or psychological conditions that are creating the illusion of a supernatural experience, but may be simply the result of electrical chemical interactions in our own brains.
But we need a video camera, right? I mean, come on.
If you wanted to go down that road and take the technical approach, there are at this point a huge number of companies that sell equipment for paranormal investigations. Some of it are standard devices, video cameras and audio recorders, tools from other industries that have been modified to fit the needs of a ghost hunter. Mm-hmm. At this point in the field, however, there are also companies like Ghost Stop in Florida that are building custom-made devices designed for paranormal investigation. The problem with a lot of these tools is that they are untested in other industries. And given the fact that we still really don't know what we're looking for as right. far as a ghost, the equipment is a rough guess
right.
at a piece of instrumentation. So any readings you might receive from something like the Periscope or the Ovilus, I think results from those tools are dubious at best.
Right, because how, if there's no standard, could you A, calibrate them, and B, then reference like
exactly.
over time other people's findings, especially if it's just a private company?
As far as the cost goes, some of these kits, which come with, say, an electromagnetic field detector, a thermometer, and a digital voice recorder, can run you anywhere between $100 and $250. The equipment used by CPI, grand total, I think we're up to around $30,000, $35,000.
Get out. Stop playing.
We've worked very hard to adopt technologies from other industries that are as good as we can get. That instead of just getting an EMF detector off the rack, we are trying to get a laboratory grade three-axis EMF detector. We want...
Which is... A
EMF detector is essentially a device.
Electromagnetic field.
Yes. No, I knew it. I wanted to see if he knew it.
I hope so.
Electromagnetic
field detector.
Field detector, yeah.
Essentially, we wanted devices that would stand up in a quote-unquote scientific court. We want data that another scientist...
That's admirable.
A real scientist could look at and say, okay, you've done your research, you've done your homework. Not only are you using the right tool, but you are using the tool correctly,
right.
which is one of the big problems with a lot of these groups running around on television.
I was just going to say that like maybe some of this new equipment are kind of like preloaded with like, you know, bugs or crackles or whatever, like the same way that you get Snapchat or Instagram, and there's a bunch of filters, and like if you don't have anything else to do, you could at least just, you know, record your face with dog ears.
Sure, absolutely.
So why wouldn't there be like kind of a contentious businessman who's like, well, if I put like a glare that happens in like 4 to 10 minutes after they hit record, everyone will buy my product because they think that they're fine. They're like, oh, the review on this is going to skyrocket because it's so much better than the other equipment I couldn't find anything with.
I think it's entirely possible. I will say right up front, I am no engineer, but I know investigators who do have degrees in engineering, and they have examined, they've bought some of these tools, and they've opened them up, and most of these things are pieces of crappy molded plastic with static sensors put in, meaning they detect static electricity. So any human walking by or any natural change in static levels will cause lights to light up and sounds to go off and alarms to ring.
And you think you're Bill Murray out there.
When you're filming an event like that with a night vision camera, all you have to do is start going, thank you so much for giving us a sign. Thank you for being here. And you put that on YouTube, and before you know it, you've got 10,000 views.
What do you think of the dramatic music, too, in these shows?
Well, as somebody in the film industry myself, I get the use of dramatic music. And when you're making a show, you want it to be entertaining. So you're going to load in sound effects and background music and things like that because it does make it look and sound cooler. And everyone wants to look and sound cool on TV. So I think that's a big part of it.
Right.
But when you load a show up with noises and sounds and then try to sell it as a documentary, I think that's where problems start because people are expecting every little tap and every little noise to be real.
Yeah.
And I've heard sounds on these shows that I have as sound effects on my own computer and go, oh, wait, that's not a ghost. That's scream number four, you know?
Mm. Right.
So
wow.
There are definitely instances of trickery and deception that I've noticed on TV shows that have been proposed as happening in the moment.
I think it's so funny that you harken back to that, like, then you get 10,000 YouTube followers, because it's like, aren't we all kind of subject to that bastardization of, like, the thing that we love so much, you know, as social media becomes, like, proliferates access to people? I think about that when it comes to, like, people who like photography. And I constantly hear them complain about how, like, you know, I could be an Instagram photographer. All I have to do is take pictures of gates and, like, lines and, you know what I mean? Like, or, like,
I tried that and
hasn't
done me anything.
So, but I think it's so hilarious that, like, even in such a specific field as your own, that, like, you're like, dude, like, there's hacks, bro. Like, there's
absolutely. You go on the App Store right now and you can find dozens of apps, Ghost Radar and Ghost Detector. And some of these apps claim to use the quote unquote sensors your phone to detect paranormal presences. Now, it is true. The iPhone does have a weak single axis magnetic field detector. It's how the compass on your phone works. But using that for serious scientific research, it can't be done because that sensor is not designed for that. You're not getting accurate readings. And many of these apps, these ghost radar things, they're sold as entertainment gimmicks. Yet some of them have descriptions that lead people to believe it is a serious device, that when a little red dot shows up, there is a ghost 5 feet away from you.
Oh, there isn't.
Sorry,
Pokemon guys.
Ghost style.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Or that, like, weird, those weird, like, fake checks that you get in the mail, you know, where it's like, you're a millionaire now, just, like, buy 90 CDs.
I wish. Send us money, and then you'll be rich.
Yeah.
That's a great little thing they got going on there. All right, well, so tell me this. Were you ever afraid when you were really ghost hunting?
Yes.
You go out, where were you? Give us a story.
Well, there have been plenty of situations where I've felt a little bit on edge and uncomfortable. 99% of the time, it's a result of people. When you start in this field, I think something a lot of paranormal investigators or would-be paranormal investigators fail to consider is that if you reach a point where people, especially homeowners, start emailing you and calling you to come in and investigate, regardless of how well you screen or email and talk to these people on the phone, you have no idea of what kind of situation you're walking into. I did a farmhouse once in Kentucky with a gentleman who was very nice, great to our team, but we could smell liquor on his breath. He seemed to get more intoxicated as the hours went on, and there were a total of 5 unlocked gun cabinets in this house with guns and ammo. I don't know if the guns were loaded. They could be, but there was boxes of bullets right there. We did our thing for a few hours. We were supposed to spend the night, but I did not feel comfortable with this person, nice as they seemed, with the lights off, they're a stranger, you have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and there's guns everywhere.
And there's guns everywhere.
I mean, no disrespect to, like, responsible gun owners who lock their
guns. No, absolutely
gun
not, but I don't know you.
Totally.
You know?
He's wasted.
They're intoxicated. We're in the middle of nowhere. And I didn't feel safe, and I, you know, my first concern is keeping my team safe, so.
See, as a cautiously paranoid person, I actually am going to deduct a safety point from you for spending a few hours there. But since you did, though, did you see any ghosts?
There,
or hear any ghosts?
There, no.
What was his story? He said, you know, Aunt Berta.
Sclerosis. That's what his story was.
Well, I think that may have been part of it. We had reports of footsteps, reports of dark, shadowy figures. There was... supposed to be an angry woman that resided in one of the upstairs bedrooms who would do things like throw objects around, shake doors. For all I know, he wasn't married, actually.
That also just sounds like a stimulant hallucination. Like, people that do a lot of stimulants have reportedly seen and done crazy things as such.
Absolutely. There are hundreds of reasons why a person could think they are seeing, hearing, or feeling a ghost, be it environmental conditions, electromagnetic pollution from your telephone, computer, something like that, or an underlying psychological or physiological condition.
Well, let me rephrase now. Have you ever been afraid or in fear because of a ghost and not a person?
That's hard to answer. I can tell you one situation. I was in upstate New York, and actually anybody can go see this place. It is now called the Olivet Center, but it's...
Where's that located?
It's on Metro North, and it was originally the Harlem Valley Psychiatric Center for the Criminally Insane. And
lovely.
It's about a dozen buildings, huge buildings, and as I said, there's a Metro North station right there.
It's shut down?
It's shut down now, and it's being turned into, I believe, a university of some sort. These are old
brick. But you got in.
Well, no, I have never been inside. I'll tell you what happened. So I pulled up one day, and I wanted to take pictures of the outside. And you can't go in, no trespassing, and probably the building's full of asbestos, so you wouldn't want to go in anyway.
And you're all above board. You're not hopping fences.
No. We're outside. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There are security, and they knew I was there. And I said, hey, can I just take a few pictures of the outside of the building? They said, sure. And they were standing right there a few feet away, sitting in their car, but... Anyway, it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, beautiful, sunny summer day. I'm looking through a window, and out of nowhere, I had the urge to get as far away from that building as possible. I have no explanation for it, but something triggered my fight-or-flight response in a way that it hasn't been in over a decade of investigating paranormal activity.
And you go into the thick of it. This is your job.
And it was very strange. I was rattled for a good 45 minutes, and I have no explanation for it, but every fiber in my body said, get the hell out of here.
You just got a sonic boom, huh?
Yeah. And honestly, first thing I did when I got back to my apartment was look up the owner of the building and send them an email and see if we could go in to investigate, because any place at this point that can give me the willies, please let me in, because I want to see why, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they said no.
Yeah.
Long story short.
Maybe a very atrocious thing happened.
Entirely possible. The building I was looking into.
Or it's a lot, like, the first thing that I thought of, since it's like a home for the criminally insane, it's not only that, like, some of these people are probably, like, went crazy in the institution. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
And also, there's a lot, that's a lot of people.
It's kind of a fair segue to this question that I have for you, which is, do you think that everybody gets a ghost? Is getting a ghost specific to an action or occurrence? Do you understand my question?
Yeah, like, is it like, would it be considered like maybe for me, I'm like more occult and like, I don't know, crunchy about stuff. So it's like, I think about ghosts as like a karmic kind of purgatorial situation.
Well, this may surprise you guys, but I don't believe in ghosts. At least not Auga. In a physical Auga. Sense.
And that's why you're a good ghost hunter, because you think it's all crap.
Well, I don't believe in ghosts, at least not in the physical sense. I believe in paranormal activity, but that is simply experiences, phenomenon that we have not named or classified yet. That doesn't mean that they are supernatural in nature.
Right.
Before we knew of things like mental illness, every person that talked to themselves was full of demons.
Right.
And as science expanded, as our ability to see and document and understand the human body grew and became more detailed, we learned of things like mental illness, and we learned that no, everybody wasn't full, who talked to themselves wasn't full of demons. There were legitimate scientific explanations for this phenomenon. Back in February of this year, Brian Cox, the English particle physicist from Manchester University, posed a theory. It was either during a TED Talks or another lecture. Anyway, he was there with Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he publicly posed this theory that the Super Hadron Collider in CERN, that's the world's largest particle accelerator, actually disproves the existence of ghosts. And without getting into a lot of physics...
I think I know what you're talking... Now I kind of get that.
Basically...
I actually have no idea what you're talking about now with the whole... You went too sciencey for me, but Barry knows, so keep going.
Basically, what he's saying, if ghosts were to exist physically, they would have to be made up of something measurable, and that something would have to originate in the human body. If you think of a ghost as a human's consciousness, their memories, their personality, there has to be something that the, how to get into this, there has to be something that allows that consciousness to transfer to a form after that person dies.
Right.
And the Super Hadron Collider, its job is to detect particles, and so far we have detected no particles that reside within the human body that are capable of transferring the information necessary to create a ghost.
Mm.
So, according to the researchers at CERN, ghosts cannot exist physically.
Okay, not a science guy, but I do remember seeing that thing about how neutrinos are the smallest particle that kind of pass through us. So what if, like, as to just, you know, play devil's advocate, it's not necessarily, like, a particle that exists in the human body, but considering that, like, a lot of things operate on these fields that we can't see, maybe a ghost is just, like, your web page. And, like, neutrinos are, like, the Wi-Fi of, like... Would you get into that?
I mean, in order to detect something like neutrinos, you would have to bring a device like the Super Hadron Collider into the home, which is impossible.
No, I know. It's that huge thing in the basement.
It's 16 miles long, or at least.
It's in Japan, right?
It's in Italy, I believe. France.
Good for them.
I think it's in like two different countries.
Okay.
And essentially, if you were able to develop a more compact version of the device, you might be able, you might be on.
That's
something.
Just what I thought when you said that. But sure, ghosts don't exist. They proved it with science.
They pretty much proved it with science. Obviously, that begs the question: what the hell am I still doing here?
Right.
It's a good question.
Keep in mind what Brian Cox proposed was, at the end of the day, simply a theory. Based on the best evidence available, but still a theory. If you look at the statistical data, something like 6 out of 10 people believe in ghosts, and 4 out of 10 claim to have had a paranormal experience. If we say that 90% of those 4 people can be explained through psychological phenomenon, weather conditions, pipes banging in the walls, and just other natural occurrences, you are still left with hundreds, if not thousands, of people whose experiences cannot be sufficiently explained, in my opinion.
Right.
Well, let's take a break to thank our sponsors.
That's right. And when you hear this sound, I want you to think of one thing. Actually, I want you to think of 3 things. First, I want you to think you might need a lawyer, and Johnny and Barry got you covered. Benjamin Hayes is the lawyer you need for starting up a small business, having a consultation about your business. Let me tell you what they do. At Hayes Law Firm, PLLC, it's a New York firm that specializes in working with startups and small businesses. Benjamin Hayes, the founder, has worked with companies doing everything from artificial intelligence to insurance to art galleries, giving him a wide variety of experience, which he would love to use to help you or your small business succeed. If you want to start a business, Hayes Law Firm provides everything a startup needs to start up, from company formation to issuing stock to hiring employees, you name it, he's ready to help you out. If you're already running a business, Hayes Law Firm handles everything involved in business operations to all types, from commercial agreements to intellectual property licensing. And he himself is a small business founder and owner, and so he understands the challenges that you may face, which means his firm's rates are reasonable, and he's very flexible when it comes to payment structure. If you'd like to discuss your goals or your situation, give Benjamin Hayes a call, 212-380-6513, or email him at info@hayeslf.com. The LF stands for law firm. Or visit him online at www.hayeslf.com. He's got a strong handshake and an even stronger sense of the law. Give him a call, 212-380-6513. Barry, what do you say?
You know, I say that it's very important to pay attention to your parents, any older person as they age, because you never know what can happen. And so you should see what's possible when healthcare gets personal. Village CareMax, a Medicaid-managed long-term plan, helps you to continue to stay at home in your community for as long as possible. A team of healthcare professionals will work with your doctor, helping you to obtain the best healthcare options available to you. Get more information about Village CareMax by calling 1-800-469-6292 or visit us, rather them, at villagecaremax.org. Village CareMax, live the life you want to live.
That's right. And after you've handled that hard, serious stuff about, you know, your family members and old age, go have some fun. It's the summertime. It's getting hot. How hot was it? 95?
Hot.
Oh, my gosh. You know what you need? You know what I need?
I think we know what we both need.
A private pool party.
Who wouldn't love that?
And you know where you can have that? At Aviator Sports and Events Center at 3159 Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. This place has everything from private pool parties to camps. You want to put your kid in a camp? Aviator Sports is the place to do it. Your kids are going to be exposed to baseball, basketball, figure skating, flag football, gymnastics, ice hockey, pickleball, soccer ball.
They're going to be tired when they get home.
That's right. I said soccer ball. I meant soccer, but volleyball. Listen, they got so many sports. Parkour and Ninja Warrior.
Whoa.
I mean, I'm jealous that I can't go to that camp myself.
Check that out.
I maybe should find out if I could go.
You can probably be a counselor.
Maybe be a counselor. All right. Well, anyway, here's what you want to do. You want to go and give them a call at 718-440-3358. That's 718-440-3358. Or log on to their website at www.aviatorsports.com. No matter what time, day or night, you're going to be greeted by an instant message by a person, a live person, who's going to be there to help you out.
Round-the-clock customer service. That's what they give you at Aviator Sports.
Absolutely right, Barry. So give them a call. Go online. Check them out. Head on over there. Tell them Johnny and Barry sent you.
Sent
you. We're trying to do, you know, fast questions.
Okay.
So you saw Blair Witch Project. Did you like it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good. Next question. Barry.
Yeah.
What do you got for him?
Oh, great. Way to line me up on that one. if you're out on a mission and
a mission.
Yeah, and you need, well, that's what I think of it as.
Yeah,
about.
Absolutely.
Most people say investigation, but that sounds so much cooler. All right, yeah. For now on, we're calling them missions. Continue.
Sure.
Nice.
Sure. When
you're
out
welcome.
When you're out on a mission and I knew a graffiti writer who every time he had a successful bomb, he would get a pack of ring dings.
By the way, that means that you like a successful graffiti
right,
writing.
Sure. Well, sorry about that. Yeah.
Next thing you know, our studio's getting
a successful painting session.
You
know what I mean? Like, I'm supposed to be adept for all the other colloquial stuff, but then people don't you know.
No, I got to make sure.
I get it.
This is jargon.
I feel you.
This is jargon. That was another part of Vince's email. He's like, you got to be, you know, a little heads up about the jargon. And I didn't know what that meant.
Fair enough.
But now I know. And
sure.
So,
good point. When he had a successful night out painting,
thank you.
He would have like a, you know, a requisite snack and drink selection. He would get Ding Dings and like a 40 of Oldie or something. And I never went with him, but I just remember one of my friends who would go paint with him all the time. Like, if I saw him with like Ring Dings and a 40 at 2 a.m., I'd be like, oh, you guys like survived. So is there something that like is a comfort to you after, especially like, I know that you mentioned it's not always a tumultuous instance, but it's like, say for that guy in Kentucky, like when you come out of something that's like, wow, man, that was like close. Is there a go-to like snack?
It's always going to be a Long Trail IPA for me.
Oof, there we go.
Yeah. Nice. A real ghost hunter. Yes.
Right there. That's what they drink.
Okay. Or a nice stiff scotch. That would do the ticket.
Mm. Is there a ghost hunter out there that you want to say is particularly whack? Whack meaning bad.
Ooh, Zach Bagans. Sorry, Jeff Belanger.
What's wrong with this guy, Zach?
Okay, so Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel.
Shots fired.
This needs to be your show, by the way. Like, well, what the hell are we doing? Travel Channel. Basically, once a show, I get pissed off about something. Uh-huh. And today it's this.
So, yeah, this is Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel. Zach Bagans and his team, which I think is all comprised of new people now. The premise of the show used to be he and his two cohorts would go into places with, and their intro, they say something like, with no big camera crews following us around. Well, that was a blatant lie, because they did have 2 to 3 production assistants who would go to these places and get extra B-roll shots and audio and
Zach,
stuff like that.
You're a liar, Zach. Why are you
so
lying?
My problem, and we know this because these production assistants have been photographed with them while
wearing
the show was
like
being filmed.
A cloak and like hiding behind it.
Yeah, invisibility cloak, trying not to be seen. No, they were out in the open when they were at the Stanley Hotel filming their episode. They had extra sound people with them and production assistants, and the whole premise of the show is it's supposed to be just them. Why do you feel the need to create this fake, you know, mystique and persona? Incorporate your production people into your show. That's what I would have done. Because it would make people at the end of the day more comfortable when you know, oh, that's Chuck who's filming them. He's the camera guy. He's always there.
Good guy,
you know?
Chuck.
Good guy, Chuck. Yeah,
he's a good dude.
Yeah.
There's the beef about Man versus Wild, where it's like the guy gets like dropped from whatever into Alaska, but the whole time like he's got someone behind him.
I can understand it from a producer's aspect. You want good B-roll, you want good Nat sound, but at least Bagans and I think his name was Nick, who's one of the other investigators from his show, they were both film school people, so they should be able to make a show by themselves. We did.
This guy
is bringing the heat. Okay, listen. Now, Barry, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Barry, have you ever had an experience where you thought a ghost was present?
All right. Well, I have had very, like, this is going to, again, be kind of crunchy, but, like, I kind of do feel energies from time to time. So I have had that intense, when you were talking about that fight or flight, being activated. I remember I was in this hotel once and I just ran out. I was like, and like, I didn't want to like the elevator dinged and I like didn't want to walk into the elevator because it was just like, and then I took the steps. It was crazy.
So you were creeped out by the hotel.
The hotel. But,
and
I won't,
somewhere else,
I won't
what?
Disclose. It was a weird couple of days
okay,
to
yeah.
begin with.
behind the paywall. We'll get into that.
Sure. But the, other thing that I'll say is that my mother always told me this story about how when she was a kid, because when I was like, hey, Ma, I think I feel stuff. And she was just like, oh, yeah, I always saw stuff when I was a kid.
I
like,
see dead people.
Great. You know, way to go, Caribbean. Like, thank you for all that shit, you know. But anyway, she saw what was a deacon or a preacher or something, like a headless deacon or a headless preacher or priest or whatever, like someone in like garb, headless. Just chilling in a like armchair when she went, it just wouldn't move. Like she went back into her room and then back outside and it was just still there. So like outside of that story and that instance where I felt that I needed to run away from this hotel, I haven't physically seen any like, you know, wavy lines or anything like that. But I have felt very strong, or I've had like looked into someone's eyes, which is really scary too. And just have thought to myself, like, oh, this is, like, not the actual person they are.
Whoa, weird.
Yeah. That's about as close as I got.
All right, Ghost Hunter. Was that legit?
Well, there are certainly external factors that can cause somebody to be creeped out, feel uncomfortable, feel like they're being watched. High sources of electromagnetic radiation of the AC variety, that's alternating current. This is what's generated by power lines and appliances. Anything above 2 milligauss or higher can induce what is called electromagnetic hypersensitivity in individuals that are susceptible.
Better Call Saul people.
Yeah.
Great show, by the way.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, just watch the show.
Everyone should watch the show. It's a good show. You should watch Breaking Bad, too, if you haven't already, if you're living under a rock. True. Anyway.
I have a ghost story, too, that I want to run by you.
Absolutely.
Is that cool?
Yeah, go for it.
So I have this terrible dream. It's about a ghost. I wake up, and I'm like, man, that was some kind of crazy dream. Like, what was going on? There was this ghost, and like, I thought maybe it was like a woman, and like something happened. And then I feel like my bed is tipping head towards the sky and like I'm about to slide off the bed. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop thinking about this because this ghost does not want me to be rehatching this clearly. And so I'm like, okay, stop, drop, we're done. Go back to sleep. Sleep fine. Never happens again. What the hell happened, Nick?
Okay, well, first I'd like to start. You said before you began your story, is this a legitimate ghost story? And I'd like to start by saying they are all legitimate ghost stories.
And a story.
And
okay,
this is why I think the field persists and will continue to persist probably forever, regardless of what hard science is telling us is correct or incorrect. Everybody loves a good story at the end of the day, and the belief in ghosts, the need to ask, is there something after death? This is perhaps the oldest question human beings have ever asked. There's something very primal about it. And I think it stems from our fear of the unknown. And we're one of only a handful of creatures on the planet that can claim to be self-aware. Until we develop better communications with those species, when we develop better communications with those species, we may discover that dolphins and other cetaceans question life after death themselves. They're highly intelligent, and I personally believe they have the capacity to do so. As far as your experience goes, nocturnal experiences, especially in the bedroom, are probably some of the most classic. Beds levitating, people having night terrors, nightmares, vivid dreams. My first instinct would be to question whether or not you actually woke up at all.
Because you're right.
We have filmed people in their beds at night who've given us permission who say we have experiences.
When
somebody says, "Well, I have an experience in my room when I go to sleep at night," and we'll say, "Well, do you mind if we put a camera, an audio recorder, some other equipment in the room?" And we've seen people toss and turn. We've filmed people sleepwalking. That's kind of freaky, especially when you don't know them.
Yeah.
You come into the hallway and there's somebody standing there, and it looks like, you know, right out of a scary movie. Their eyes are bugging out. And
glazed over.
Yeah, yeah.
But you didn't get scared by that.
He said it's people, scared, usually not ghosts.
I wouldn't say scared. It's unnerving, certainly.
Okay, unnerving.
People do things that are unnerving because oftentimes you're in the homes of total strangers. Businesses are easier because you're in a more or less public place, even though you're there after hours. I don't know. It feels different somehow when you're with a museum curator at 2 o'clock in the morning, whereas you're with Joe Schmo in his basement at 2 o'clock in the morning.
And he's got 5 guns.
And he's got 5 guns in the house, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to play an audio that you gave us. Do you want to just say something about this before I play it?
Okay. Well, which one?
I'm going to play the longer one.
Okay. So this is a sample that was recorded by my group in 2007 at Fort Sewell in Marblehead, Massachusetts.
Ooh, Marblehead. Shout out, Marblehead.
Marblehead. Yeah. I had a good time over there.
Oh, you guys place. You guys are familiar with Marblehead.
Yeah.
Sox.
Minos, roast beef, anyone?
I'm a pescatarian.
Yeah, really? Missing out. I was I have this hilarious story about how I tried to swim off of a private dock.
Okay.
And it was next to this yacht club or whatever. And I just think to myself, like, there were so many people, like, at their yacht club, like, eating dinner and, like, cracking open lobsters and just being like, what is that terrible sound? And, like, looking down and being like, oh, it's a black guy trying to swim. So.
Marblehead.
That's right.
Let's go Sox. All right, so you're in Marblehead.
We're in Marblehead.
You're rooting for the Sox, and you're standing in a house, and what happens?
Well, all right, well, we're not at a house. We're at Fort Sewell. It's a public park. Anyone can go there, and it is actually open at night. So go up and have a look.
Is that the one with the tower and the telescope or whatever?
It's got telescopes there. It's right across the harbor from Marblehead Lighthouse.
Whoa. Okay. So that's where I was at the lighthouse.
It was built in 1773. Mm-hmm. And it was named for Samuel Sewell, who was actually one of the judges that presided over the Salem witch trials. Mm. Rumors of the fort are that prisoners were held there in the windowless dungeon during the War of 1812. However, we have found no historical evidence to say that, yes, there definitely were prisoners there. It's entirely possible, but we don't know. There were some wooden structures on the site that are no longer standing, and all that's left now is an upper sort of field area with a couple mounds, one containing an underground bunker, and then there are three sealed rooms set into the hillside, a kitchen, a guard room, and a storeroom.
And so what's going to happen when I press play here?
I was outside one of these rooms, and I was recording audio with an analog tape recorder, and I was asking questions in case there was any presence in the area. And you ask things like, what is your name? Did you live here? Where were you born? You're trying to get a response, and you're also trying to learn something about whatever or whoever may be there. So I was asking some questions. I heard nothing at the time, and then when we got back to our base and we're reviewing our findings.
Where is your base?
Our base is in Forest Hills, Queens,
New York. Where I live, by the way.
What?
Shout out
to Forest Hills.
Thank you.
You guys are bumping J. Cole, editing ghost stuff.
Just had a great Sigur Rós concert. Unfortunately, I missed it.
I don't know who that is. Yeah.
Oh, Icelandic. Dude plays an electric guitar with a violin bow. Great ethereal stuff. Check him out. Did a song for the trailer of the game Dead Space.
Show notes, you guys.
Yeah. Okay. So let me. Should I press play?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
press
go ahead.
Play. 8.2. 8.2.1. 2.1. Coming back. 0.4 on even. 0.2.
He actually played a couple things there.
Wait, it's still playing.
Were you a cook here? Are you British or American? Were you born overseas?
No. Ugh, bone
Did
chilling.
Did everybody hear that? Should I drop that little last bit one
Please
more time?
Please do, for the listeners.
All right, we're just going to run that last few seconds back. Hold on. It takes me a little while.
If you're a skittish person, I would suggest that, you know, that you not listen to this over again.
He sent me these at, like, you know, 10 o'clock at night the other night, and I was like, you know, I'm not going to play this right before I go to bed. So,
good call.
Were you born overseas?
No. Now, how do I know that wasn't you or one of the crew members just being like,
well, we always have video cameras set up when we do any kind of investigation, whether or not we're simply measuring environmental conditions, conducting an interview, anything. So there's always video rolling, and in the shot you see just me and my little recorder, and given the sensitivity of the microphone of that recorder, you know, if you were 10, 20 feet away and whispering, you wouldn't have been picked up. So we know that it's not external contamination from a human because of the sense we know the sensitivity of the device that we were using.
So under oath, you will say with your hand raised, the listeners can't see this, but can I get you to raise a hand? That is, his hand is up.
Oh, that's true. I could like Instagram it right now.
I can say in all honesty, this is not human contamination. Whether or not it is radio interference, keep in mind we're at a location just by a harbor, so you've got boat radios, you've got shortwave. We've actually picked up transmissions from airplanes on investigations, which we're not supposed to be able to do, by the way. So FTA, you should
look into that, guys.
Really look into that.
We already got them listening to the show now because of the graffiti comment earlier.
Yeah,
while you're listening, why don't you, you know, fix whatever it is that Nick's talking
about. Yeah, because I shouldn't be able to hear pilots talking to other pilots. That's a big no-no.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. All right, so Barry, I understand you got to run.
Yeah, I've got to get out of here just because of the corporate entity that controls my paycheck.
Right.
So at the moment, and I'm not talking about any of our...
Not our CNG peeps.
No. Just another gig. So I'm going to go. I'm happy that I got to chat and meet with Nick. And get some questions answered for myself. But yeah, until next time, man. And I'm really looking forward to watching Paranormal.
Same.
Thank you.
All right, Barry, get to work.
Thanks.
And if I don't see you, have a great 4th of July.
All right, awesome, man. Take care.
All right. And now, introducing the Johnny and Barry Show.
Yeah, listen, Joseph.
That's right, everybody. It's the Johnny and Barry Show. Barry had to go, though, so it's just Johnny. But we kept Nick, the ghost hunter.
Still here.
Thank you. It's great that you're here.
No, not a problem. Happy to be here.
We have a couple minutes left, so I just want to ask you a couple other questions. Let's start with this. I want to get just a spooky story from you. You're a guy who hunts ghosts. Can you give me something that'll make the little hair that I have left on my head stand up?
All right. So one little instance that comes to mind. I'm in an abandoned resort hotel in the Catskill Mountains. Can't give you the name of the location due to confidentiality protocols that my group keeps with every case, if requested by the client. Anyway, I'm standing in a dining room, blown out windows, dust all over the place, wreck of a building, pitch black, and I hear my name whispered in my ear. Can't remember
which
one.
Were you alone?
No, I was with my crew. I heard my name, Nick, just like that. And I turned around and I go, "What? What's up?" And my guys go, "What? What's up?" And I said, "Well, who just said my name?" Apparently none of them had.
Mm.
And I heard it clear as day.
Let's make this, if we're going to make this story more spooky.
Okay.
Because, no disrespect, the little hair that I have left is still...
It's not going up.
All not right. On that. But maybe it can. Let's set the scene a little bit.
Okay.
Let's get you to really take me there.
Okay. So we're up north in the Catskills, in the general area of Woodstock, a Shokan Reservoir. And the building was built in the 1930s. And
It was a hotel.
Yeah, it was like a Jewish community communal retreat. Actually, the painter Marc Chagall stayed there for about 6 months after his first or second wife passed away. I can't remember how many times he was married.
Okay, so it's an empty resort.
Empty resort.
What time of day?
It would be around 6 or 7 o'clock at night at this point.
Is it dark out?
It is dark out, and it is absolutely pitch black in this place. And
is there anybody else there besides you and how many people?
I'm here with myself, at the time, another investigator of mine, and my father, who's actually co-founder of the group,
although
he no longer investigates with us.
Why?
I think he kind of just wants to move on to bigger and better things, and he's looking to retire from his 9-to-5 anyway. So,
but that's cool that he was with you guys.
He helped.
It's you, an investigator, your pops, cameraman,
and the client.
So total of five.
No, it was myself, one investigator, my father, and the client.
Okay, four people.
So we're in here.
You got flashlights.
We've got a video camera.
How'd you get
rolling,
in?
Through a window.
your dad got in through the window too.
Absolutely.
You couldn't have gone around and opened the door for the guy.
No, that would be too easy. That would be just too easy.
Okay. So you climbed through a window. The client's got the keys, but they're like, all right, I'll fall. Why did you go through a window?
Well, the building is in terrible disrepair. Mm. The front door is inoperable. The basement is flooded, so you're not going through.
Could there,
there
be animals around?
Oh, there are animals. We have them documented on thermal imaging camera. Raccoons, possums, skunks. It's quite a lively place.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So you go through a window.
So we go through a window. We're in there. And one of the first things that's apparent was that the place is still full of stuff. And it's been abandoned since 1991.
Thank you. Now we're getting a little creepy. But what kind of stuff?
Well, you go into some of the best, the guest rooms, and the beds are still made. You go in the bathrooms, and there are little plastic cups still wrapped in plastic sitting on the sinks. There are little bars.
Could you
of
use
soap.
The toilet there if you wanted?
The plumbing was shut off, but there was still water in the toilet tanks.
I wanted to know that, but I didn't want to ask.
In
but
the kitchen, and all the dishes and plates and cups are stacked and laid out ready for the next day's service. It looks like literally people just walked out one day and never returned.
When was this? Oh, sorry, when did you do this investigation?
This investigation would have been in spring of 2006 would have been my first visit to the location.
Okay. 16 years old. You're in there. You got flashlights.
Yeah.
You're seeing. It's dark. And it's pitch black in there.
Pitch
so
black.
You're shining your
flashlights around.
You're seeing a couch.
We're seeing a couch. There
paintings
was a,
there was on the
piano.
Wall.
Piano. Actually, I was allowed to take one of the paintings home with me. It's this creepy little girl. And yeah, she's creepy and great. I've got her hanging in my apartment.
And you don't think that by bringing that with you, it's possible you brought some kind of hex or
no,
ghost or
absolutely
something.
Not. But we can touch on another case directly involving a pretty creepy item, if you like.
Yeah, I would like. So fine. Let's just finish this one up, though. So you're walking around. You have your flashlights. What happens?
So we're in the dining room. And we weren't doing any kind of research at the time. I think we were checking equipment, things like that, and had my back turned to my group, and I was going through some cases or something, and I hear my name whispered in my ear, Nick. And I turn around, and I think it's a member of my team. So I say, hey, guys, what's up? And they all look at me confused and say, what? And I say, well, who just said my name? And they go, we didn't say your name. And I heard it clear as day, and it sounded like whoever it was, you know, an inch, 2 inches away from my ear. I felt breath.
You know, that actually happened to me once, too.
Did it?
Weird. Yeah, I was walking down Court Street, you know, Brooklyn Court
Street. Sure, sure.
Walking by the, you know, one of the many chain drugstores, and I'm with a friend, and we hear this, like a laugh, both of us, right behind our heads, and we just turn around, there's nothing. No one.
Spooky.
It's a little weird, yeah.
It's a little weird.
But okay, so you hear Nick. You look around. It's a little weird. Nobody said it. Possibly someone from the other side.
As I said, I don't believe in ghosts, at least not in the physical sense. But to quote a great man, I want to believe. That's David Duchovny's Agent Mulder from The X-Files, for those who don't know.
I did not. Okay, so tell me about the item story.
So there is a theory in the paranormal world called object attachment, and this is essentially that items can be haunted just the way a location can be haunted. So an example would be ghost ships, right? Everyone's heard the phrase ghost ship, haunted boat. Well, boat is
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean. It's both a location, because you can kind of consider a boat a location, but it's also kind of a big object. So it's a little bit of both. But things like jewelry, pictures, crosses, any small object could be allegedly haunted. Anyone who's seen the movie The Conjuring?
I have not.
Which is based on the exploits of Ed and Lorraine Warren, who were two real paranormal investigators, rather controversial figures in and of themselves. But that movie deals heavily with allegedly haunted objects. I recently worked on a case in the Hudson Valley in Stony Point, New York, that directly revolved around a private residence and a location within this residence that the owners believed to be haunted. The home itself was built in 1793, and I don't want to give too much of the case away because it will be appearing on our show, Paranormal, But in the basement of this home was a long black raincoat made out of, looked like black rubber. And it had been there for decades, hung on the wall, never touched. The homeowners didn't touch it. They never moved it because when the previous homeowners acquired the building, the homeowners before them said, yeah, that old coat in the basement, don't touch it. Just leave it alone. Homeowners didn't ask any questions about it. They just kind of left it alone. And over the years, the current family who lives there reported hearing footsteps.
Wait, let me stop you there absolutely. For a second. Somebody bought a house from some people who had told them that there's a potentially haunted black raincoat.
They never used the word haunted.
Well, you know, we're going to bring on our attorney at law, Benjamin Hayes, who's going to talk about a court case.
Are
about someone buying
about
a haunted
Ackley house?
Yeah, so this is a case from 1991. It's up in Nyack, New York. So this family, the Ackleys, they own a house there, and they want to sell it. Now, for years, they've been advertising their house as haunted. They claim that they see ghosts. They told the Reader's Digest that they have ghosts there. The mother said that her grandchildren receive gifts from the ghosts, and you know, the daughter says that the ghosts used to wake her up every morning by shaking the bed, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a local legend. So, you know, fast forward to the late 80s. This guy named Jeffrey Sambowski, he wants to buy the house. He puts down a down payment. And he's from New York City, so he's, you know, he's not a local, so he's never heard any of this. And so he buys the house, and he hears about, you know, this haunted, it's haunted. And so he says, hey, I wouldn't have bought this if I knew that. And he wants to cut the deal. He wants his money back. So at the trial level, he loses. The Ackleys win. They said, you know, buyer beware, that the Ackleys didn't have to tell him. So he appeals. So the appellate court reverses. And so there's a very famous line that since the Ackleys, you know, told people about the ghosts for years, they told magazines and newspapers and local press, as a matter of law, the house is haunted.
Now back to Nick.
In this case that you're talking about, the person was told what exactly?
The person was told that there is a object in the basement, this coat. Just don't go near it. Don't touch it. And I asked the homeowner, I didn't meet the homeowner. It was two generations of homeowners who lived in this house.
Okay.
So you've got the generation that's in there now, and you have the grandparents who lived there before the current owners.
Okay.
And they were the ones who bought the home from the people that said, that coat in the basement, stay away from it. Don't touch it. So.
And they were just like, well, okay, yeah.
Yeah, they were.
See, I would have been like, what the hell are you talking about?
I guess you could say superstitious enough to say, okay, we're just going to leave it alone. We're not going to think about it. It's just going to sit there in the basement.
All right.
Whatever. So anyway, it sat there. And over the years, the current residents would report hearing the sound of footsteps in the master bedroom upstairs. I will say the master bedroom has wall-to-wall carpeting. And the floor does creak when you walk across the floor, but it creaks in a very particular way, and the clients are describing the exact sound that's made if someone were to get out of the bed, walk across the room, and leave. And they would report hearing this when they would be alone in the house and know for a fact no one was upstairs. They would also report the smell of firewood when there would be no fire burning in the location and drastic changes in temperature in the living room.
That's pretty weird.
So the coat itself, we've done multiple investigations, and I don't want to get too much into our findings, but at the conclusion of our second investigation, I was actually given permission to take the coat home with me.
Oh.
So we took the coat back to our facility in Forest Hills. We had a camera on this coat for 2 weeks. We had it attached to various sensors. Nothing anomalous occurred. Nothing happened.
Would you ever put the coat on?
No, simply because it's so old, I think I would rip it apart.
Okay.
If it was in better condition, hell yes.
You don't think it'd be the type of thing where you put the coat on and then you can't get it off?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Eric, can we get your opinion on that, or you're good? Let's get you mic four. There's mic four.
I'm wearing the coat?
We have Eric, Nick's better half.
That's right.
Eric, your homeboy right here has a haunted coat. Do you have a feeling as to whether or not he should put said coat on? And please talk directly into the mic.
Definitely not. He should just leave it alone, just like the other family did.
Why don't you bring the coat back to the basement? Did you bring the coat back?
I did not bring the coat back. It is mine to keep.
You've seen this coat.
I have.
Coat is now in the property, is now the property of Crypto Paranormal Investigations.
That's kind of cool.
The homeowners, they had to sell the home. I'm not going to get into reasons behind that, but the homeowners no longer live there, and the coat, I asked if I could keep it, and they said, sure.
Nice. So, okay.
I was allowed to take it.
Eric, do you want to give an opinion as to what you feel about Nick's job?
I'm indifferent about it.
Do you ever participate?
That's a lie.
Do you ever go on these journeys or what? Like, just give me a sense of what you're
I've gone to one invest or mission, as you like to call it, two missions, I guess.
All right.
And both experiences have been a little scary and like intriguing at the same time. So it's definitely eye opening into the whole ghost world.
I actually took him to that abandoned hotel in the Catskills that I mentioned.
Code name?
Vacation Alpha Tango.
Nice. Yeah. And you don't? Do you all get code names?
Well, my guys call me the coach.
Nice.
I call brand new investigators, we call them ragamuffins.
Darn
and
right.
Then after a few weeks, you become
just
an investigator
muffins.
In training. Well, yes, then just
then
muffins.
Just a muffin.
And then you're an investigator in training.
Okay, yeah. That's good. That's kind of similar to what they do here with the people at work at the radio.
Well, there's a certain level of hazing. You know, you have to put your new guys through some stuff. So,
all right. I asked you earlier how did this whole thing start? But I want you to be a little bit more specific. What made you want to hunt ghosts? Like, what happened to make you want to do that?
Well, I've always been interested in science, technology, and people. when I was just turning 14, I remember picking up a book, and in that book, it described an investigator, a gentleman named Joshua P. Warren, and it was called How to Hunt Ghosts. And I picked it up and I read
How old were you? I'm sorry.
I was just turning 14 at the
okay.
time.
Okay.
And I picked up his book and I looked through it, and it described this guy who was employing not just video cameras, but real scientific devices and real scientific theories in the field of parapsychology. He was attempting to bring a level of legitimacy to a field that has been treated as a poor relation by the majority of the scientific community for far too long. There are phenomena that occur in the world that we just don't understand yet. And I think it's a big mistake of investigators to take something that we don't understand and label it paranormal instead of just saying, okay, well, we just don't understand it yet. Anyway, I read this book, and I had never considered the possibility of applying science to the supernatural, and the idea just hooked me. And the more I read and the more I researched, I realized this person wasn't alone. There had been whole university programs, especially in the 1970s and 80s right here in the States, that attempted to quantify and study paranormal and supernatural phenomenon under controlled conditions. Many of these programs were unsuccessful, but it was the fact that they tried it all that I found really inspiring. And I began, you know, as I said, you pick up the family video camera, you go out to the local cemetery at night, and we began getting requests to come into residences and businesses. And most of those early investigations, you didn't find anything, or we found stuff that, looking back now, we're able to disprove and recreate. And the more experience you get, the more things you are able to come up with alternate explanations for.
All right.
So I'm never afraid to go back and look at a case from 5 or 6 years ago and say, okay, well, we have more information now. We now know that event A was created by such and such.
Okay, last question. Let's say I have a friend who believes that they have a ghost in their attic or their basement or the trunk of their car. And they want you to come check it out. However, they don't want the people they know, the people they work with. And I'm not talking about me, folks. I don't have a car. But they don't want people to know that they're afraid they might have a ghost haunting some issue of their life.
Sure.
Can they call you and get some anonymity?
Absolutely. We extend resources to any individual who asks for our help or assistance. We offer consultations by phone, by email, free of charge.
Are you booked for the next few months, or like we could get this going right now?
You could call me up right now, and I'll do my best to listen to what you have to say and give you my feedback.
Give a phone number.
Help if I can. 917-750-5310.
I always repeat twice.
917-750-5310.
Listeners, if you didn't catch it by that, just, you know, rewind or something. You're on your own.
Yeah, you really are at this point.
Okay.
As I said, investigations, consultations, we do not charge for our services. If you'd like to make a donation towards travel expenses, that's always helpful, because sometimes we're driving cross-country and, gas, it does get a bit expensive. But
sure.
You're not obligated to pay, and we do guarantee complete confidentiality to all of our clients. Crypto does retain the rights to any and all evidence that we may collect, video or audio, but we will never publish any evidence that might compromise the identity or integrity of our clients.
All right. You know what? I believe this interview is adjourned.
Cool.
Nick Smith Koblitz, Crypto Paranormal. Am I saying that right?
That's right.
I better be saying it right by the end of this interview. Eric, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I guess we'll ride out. Nick, you want to say your last goodbye?
Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. This has been really fun. And as we say at CPI, get it on film.
Thanks again, Nick.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
For everyone at CNG, Barry and Johnny, peace.